This is the 7th of March, 95, in Dr. Leib Kessler's kitchen for the National Council of Jewish Women. This is Howard Braun and Selma Weiss and, say something,
and Leib Kessler.
And Leib Kessler. I believe that we were talking the last time we met about Montefiore Hospital and it is my plan to try to draw a picture in words of how Montefiore Hospital gradually declined and eventually was lost to the Jewish community. This, of course, is without documentation of any type, but just my impression and observation of matters regarding Montefiore Hospital over the years. And I think last week we talked about the new chairman of departments, whereas previously this had been held by local Jewish practicing physicians who attained some semblance of importance in the community. And now these jobs are being given by the new direction of the board of directors to people who were not members of our community, not medical members of our community, but rather people with reputations as administrators who had written books and papers and attained some prominence in the medical community at large. Of interest was the fact that they still were Jews, and in other words, non-Jews need not apply, and they were people who came from other communities. Now, I spoke last week about Dr. Ravitch, who was not a pleasant man, was extremely egotistical. This is a man who had been to other Jewish hospitals. He had trained at Johns Hopkins under some of the leading surgeons of bygone days, and it was the plan at Johns Hopkins in those days to train, that is, educate doctors specifically for the job of being chiefs of service in various hospitals around the country. And certain Ivy League and other prominent universities took pride in numbering the people who they educated, who then later became prominent chiefs of service. Now, for Ravitch, I may not have mentioned that he had been the chief at Mount Sinai, and they quickly got rid of him, and then he went to Chicago to Michael Reese, also a Jewish hospital, and they quickly got rid of him there, and we ended up with him. Phil Trone was a man of many talents, perhaps more talented than Ravitch, in that some of his research work was quite credible. He was a serious teacher, but he had very fixed ideas about how the hospital should function. And though there was certainly an element of correctness to his approach, it was not necessarily correct for our hospital or our Jewish community. And therein lay the seeds of trouble that eventually led to the demise of Montefiore Hospital. His concept was essentially that the hospital should be run by full-time personnel. In other words, not the practicing attending physician who is out seeing patients in his office and bringing them to the hospital, but that once this patient or patients came to the hospital, that patient then became the responsibility of the full-time attending staff, full-time in the sense that they worked and had their offices at the hospital, were paid by the hospital and or, as the case may be, the university, and their work was done essentially, their footwork, legwork was done essentially by the house staff, that is, the interns and residents and even the medical students. Of course, we at that time, as attending practicing physicians, recognized that there was a problem with this. The Jewish community did not willingly accept the designation of control of their lives and their well-being to other people with whom they were unfamiliar, and certainly not to interns and residents, because it was a natural thought and tendency that if a man with Tom Shoup's reputation as a great surgeon, and he had been for many years taking care of people in the Jewish community, that suddenly he would have nothing to say once that patient got in the hospital. The concept being that the attending physician would be making rounds on the patient, making notes on the patient, but the orders were actually written by the intern and or the medical student on the advice of the consultants, the full-time people, and the advice of the senior residents above them. So this created a great tempest at Montefiore Hospital, and Filtrone, in spite of the arguments and pleadings to the board of directors to reverse this concept, had his way. He had his way for a couple of reasons. First of all, as I mentioned, the general concept was that a hospital would be of no value if it didn't have a residency program. The residency program was dependent upon assigning the residents responsibility. If they were not assigned responsibility, it was a general concept, therefore they would not apply to any hospital where they were not given some authority and responsibility. Of course, those of us who were practicing physicians had different ideas. We thought that the responsibility should be limited, it should be graduated, and finally it should be wholly dependent on the desires of the attending physicians. And if anything, the attending physicians had to be educated to accept a measure of transfer of authority, which was never done. So that the other reason that Filtrone had his way was that the board was sold on this concept that he presented, because they were told the same thing by their peers on the university board, and they wanted to identify with the university in every way possible. They couldn't conceive, and something that I recognized and said publicly at the time, that Montefiore was not then and would never be, under present auspices, a university hospital. That as far as the people at Pittsburgh were concerned, as far as the university was concerned, Presbyterian Hospital was the university hospital, and that the best we could do was be associated with it, and it was incumbent upon us to make the most of our position and develop the talents that we had in every way possible without destroying them. And it was my feeling, and I think all of the physicians of the time, that by taking the authority away of control of the patient from the attending physician would sooner or later become disenchanted with that kind of assignment and go elsewhere. But of course, at that time, it couldn't go elsewhere. So Montefiore Hospital was stuck with, complemented by the fact most Jewish physicians did not have an alternative, did not have an option. The other reason that Filtrone was successful is because he was a very competent public speaker, and he was extremely glib, and he was able to convince people of his philosophy. He had much charm in dealing with people that he had to deal with where he needed something to be done. He was not that way in dealing with the people in his own department, and he therefore developed many enemies among his own staff.
I'd like to stop you for a moment. Can you explain whether or not this split, in the terms you expressed them, mm-hmm. wasn't that a national trend which apparently has been proven as a necessity? That is, the administrators and other staff and professional staff operate hospitals so that it isn't just a local problem between personalities here in Pittsburgh.
You mean, is it a universal problem?
That's right.
Yes, it is a universal problem, and it's very hard for hospitals to find a happy medium where education has its place and where patient care has its place, so that it takes a certain amount of talent to achieve that. Now, I think it's achievable because I personally trained in an institution in New York where everybody was in private practice. Nobody was on the payroll of the hospital, but everybody had an office in the hospital and everybody practiced in the hospital, so that there was no choice but to refer your problems as a house staff, as a training officer, to the people who were around you all the time. Now, I also experienced this kind of thing at Allegheny General Hospital. When I finally went there, that is precisely what we developed at Allegheny General and made it into a great hospital. It was my concept, and of course others on the attending staff at Montefiore, that with the talent that we had available, it was entirely possible to develop an extremely talented hospital which would provide an unmatchable service and still maintain a residency program, providing the money was available to do it. It takes money to run a residency program, and somehow I think that the authorities then felt that they could do this through the university without having that kind of an expense. And there was just this concept in this battle in those days between the concept of full-time practice of medicine versus attending or visiting practice of medicine, visiting staff. And I think it goes on to some extent today, but I think that there's more awareness that the attending staff has to be involved in the teaching program. Classic example of that was when we started a residency program at Presbyterian Hospital in neurosurgery, in my specialty. The first few years, we were all bounced out of that program from a teaching point of view. The old-timers in neurosurgery who were then very active, like Stuart Rao and Tony Susan and myself and a few others. And the first couple of years, the residents in the university program failed their examinations. So then, all of a sudden, we got a plea to please come back and start attending the meetings and developing a closer relationship with the residents who were in the program. So that there are many examples that to demonstrate that the concept has to be modified. There is no one way, and yet with Phil Trone and with Ravitch, there was only one way. It was the university's way or no way at all, but as I said, we were not the university. We were a private hospital made up of private physicians who brought their patients to Montefiore Hospital. We didn't have the attractiveness to patients and to referring doctors, for example, that the university hospital had. For example, the university had for many, many years turned out residents in all specialties. We had not done that. These residents went out into the peripheral communities, and when they had a problem case, where would they send them? They send them to the place of their training. They send them back to the, as we say, the fountain of knowledge, which to them was their university or their hospital. We did not have this source. When we turned out residents in our limited residency program at Montefiore Hospital, they all stayed right here in Pittsburgh and became competitors with us. They weren't referring patients in, so we didn't have anything to attract us. The name university, for example, attracted patients au naturel. It was natural. If we can't figure out the problem in Elwood City, we'll send you to the university. As a Jewish local private hospital, we didn't have that demand. So that What we had was darn good, well-trained, numerous staff who were willing to filter out into the community and bring their patients in. Now, once you start interfering with that simple numerical factor, that key to filling your beds, you're going to look for trouble, and that's precisely what happened. So when Ravitch started to limit the surgeons and what they were allowed to do, and it was offensive and high-handed, which he did with me as well, the surgeons started to look elsewhere. It just so happened, to the disadvantage of Montefiore Hospital, that it was an era of change in Jewish relations with the community. And so it was in medicine. And for the
first time.
Well, this was the 60s, the mid-60s. And as we all know, this was a big era of change, of demand for freedom, of demand for Negro rights, the bus sit-ins and so forth were developing. And so it was for Jews as well. For the first time, hospitals were taking Jews on their staff. For example, Allegheny General Hospital, always known as a seat of a very restrictive practice as far as religious groups went, actually invited me on the staff of the hospital. George McGovern, who is Catholic, told me the story. He had come on the staff just a couple of years before me, and George McGovern turned out be the savior of Allegheny General Hospital in many ways. He developed heart surgery in Pittsburgh, was the only one who really did, and did it at Allegheny General Hospital. And George McGovern tells me that he was turned down the first time that his predecessor, Ed Kent, wanted to bring him on the staff because he was Catholic. So this is an example of what was going on in Pittsburgh in medicine prior to the 60s. But during the 60s, things started to open up to the disadvantage of Montefiore Hospital. They no longer had a monopoly. They not only didn't have a monopoly on doctors, they didn't have a monopoly on patients, because you could also get kosher meals at other hospitals. So these were the things that made Montefiore Hospital unique. Suddenly, they were no longer there. But interestingly, nobody recognized that. They went on in their inevitable way, convinced that they were right, everybody else was wrong, and so it led to the decline. Because of this acrimony that developed between attending staff and administration, a classic example developed that raised everybody's ire, particularly yours truly. And that was the story of Larry Adler. Larry Adler was a well-trained cardiologist, now practicing in the city and very successfully at Shadyside Hospital. Larry Adler learned cardiac catheterization. Cardiac catheterization became the basis upon which the whole field and science of heart, modern heart treatment and heart surgery developed. We had nobody else to do it at Montefiore. Allegheny General had one man at that time by the name of Fisher. If I were to tell you now there are 15 people on the staff of Allegheny General who do cardiac catheterization, you would know how this was the beginning of a new science in medicine that developed exponentially. When Larry Adler came back well-trained to do this, he was told by Phil Trone and the administration he could not do this at Montefiore Hospital because this was a hospital function and they would hire somebody to do this. So they got a full-time man to come in and do it. I was involved in this particularly because I was doing carotid arteriography in the x-ray department. I had done a lot of work in the x-ray department, but they had no one to replace me, and there was nobody pounding at the bushes for a job to do carotid arteriography or pneumoencephalography, which is what I was doing in the x-ray department. And I had a wonderful relationship with Montefiore's x-ray department, and we had really developed a good service of this kind of diagnostic testing. But in the room next to the one that I used was this new man, I don't even remember his name. He couldn't find the artery if his life depended on it to put the catheter in. There was Larry Adler, not allowed to do it, but this guy was doing it. I can't tell you how many times I bailed him out, went in and helped him do the procedure, and bailed him out when he got into trouble during the procedure. But nobody cared, nobody worried about the patient, nobody worried about the eventual development of this service, and of course, it failed. Nobody has done cardiac catheterization at Bonneville Hospital, to my knowledge, until very recently. When I say recently, I mean I think within the past maybe 5 or 7 or 8 years that they now are doing it, if that recent, maybe even less.
They just hired a man from Harvard that's supposed to be a really wonderful.
Well, there you have it. So that's my point. At any rate, this led to a lawsuit by Larry Adler against Montefiore Hospital. That lawsuit, I have never failed to always look to Larry Adler with great respect, because not only was it an extremely aggravating experience, but it was a principle that he fought for, and correctly so, and I backed him in that. It cost him a lot of money, and unfortunately, he lost the suit. He lost the suit on the basis that the judge said, in effect, that a hospital board of directors has a right to direct how they want their facilities to be used and by whom. And nobody could argue with that. It was not that it was illegal what they were doing, but it was certainly unwise and, in my judgment, immoral. At the same time, and I don't know the exact date relationship, but during the same period of time, the medical staff, as a general group, took up arms against Montefiore Hospital and decided to sue Montefiore Hospital as a group, and it was called Concerned Physicians, formed a group. I don't know if they were incorporated or what they were doing. It was all non-surgical physicians against Montefiore Hospital and Filtrone, again for the reason that their practice and their control of their patients was taken away from them, interfered with by Montefiore Hospital. As surgeons, it was more difficult to do that. You couldn't allow ghost surgery, so in a sense, surgeons were not so affected by it. Plus, the fact that we didn't have as much of a house staff to concern us that was clamoring to do the surgery. They were mostly house staff of foreign immigrants who were glad to have a position of any type, and if we told them to hold a retractor, they did so. So that this was not a problem that directly affected us. We, in effect, as surgeons, were able to take care of our own patients. It affected the writing of orders on medical patients, whether it was a heart patient or a gallbladder patient or a stomach patient or whatever. And the group finally in disgust got together, formed this group called Concerned Physicians, but because we were sympathetic, we voiced our sympathy for this suit by making up a petition, which I personally wrote out, and got the signatures of all 39 surgeons on the staff of Montefiore Hospital at that time, in support. And the petition said, "We, the undersigned, members of the surgical staff of Montefiore Hospital, wish to make it known that we are in complete agreement with the substance of the complaint in equity filed by the, quote, concerned physicians, unquote, against Montefiore Hospital. That we support their contention that the best interests of the patient are not now served by the medical patient care and teaching program as presently administered. That we concur further that the future status of Montefiore Hospital as a leading community hospital is in serious jeopardy. That we consider the efforts of the concerned physicians to be a creditable contribution to the progress of good medical service to the community. Further, we wish to make clear that we do not oppose the teaching program, full-time chiefs of service, or university affiliation, but in our collective judgment, consider that these ends can be readily achieved by a more equitable usage of attending physician services. Specifically, the complete authority of the attending physician to administer to his patient must be maintained, and his right to prescribe should not be abridged. We further consider that the prime factor in the present unpleasant stalemate can be attributed to the present administration. This administration has in effect arbitrarily and stridently usurped control of medical policy, ignored the attending medical staff, and imported full-time service chiefs to carry out policy that, in effect, relinquishes hospital autonomy, bypasses local experience and highly competent physicians, dissolves the sanctity of the physician-patient relationship, invades patients' prerogatives of privacy and freedom of physician choice, and finally creates an atmosphere of intrigue, mistrust, and mutual respect. We categorically oppose these policies and find them not to be in the best interest of patient care and the specific needs of the Jewish community. And as I said, this was signed by all the active members of the staff. There were a total of 39 physicians at that time who signed this petition. Nonetheless, again in court, the physicians lost. And they lost again on the same basic principle that if you have a set of bylaws and you have a board of directors, they have a right to run their institution according to the laws that they set down. They couldn't do things that were in contradistinction to those laws, but as long as they were following the policies they themselves set up, there was nothing that anybody else could do about it. And getting back to the statement of my dear departed stepbrother Lester Hamburg, if you don't like it, leave. Essentially, that's what happened, because it was the time was right for physicians to get on the staff of other hospitals. Some of the Central Medical Pavilion was completed at that time, and many physicians left were there. Shadyside Hospital started to take Jewish physicians, West Penn Hospital, as I said, in my case, Allegheny General Hospital. Even Presbyterian Hospital, which was a stronghold of resistance to assimilation, started to take physicians on the staff who were Jewish. And so it was that Montefiore did not have a tremendous flood of physicians clamoring to use their facilities and their beds.
In a word, is there a key reason why suddenly Jewish doctors became acceptable, or even better, everywhere?
It was the time.
That's not an answer. It was a time 10 years ago, too. It was a time. There was something more. What?
No, the whole...
Well, I think the whole picture in the country, we're shocked. For instance, I was reading the diary that you asked me to dictate for you, my diary, and I was astounded, for example, that in France, and a lot of my diary was written in Paris, and this was in 1948, I was making constant comparisons to the fact that there were black people sitting in restaurants. And in America, I hadn't seen such a thing. That was just not an accepted thing. Things were changing. The war changed things. The revolution, the days of the hippies were changing things, and it was also that laws were changing in our favor. You couldn't discriminate. There were court cases that were coming up, so that it became a much more common experience. There was, I think, perhaps another issue, and that was the issue of specialization. It just so happens that the best trained physicians at that time in the city were Jews, and there were lots of them, and they were available. And therefore, it was hard if you had, as Allegheny General at that time, had two cardiologists, board-certified cardiologists on its staff. It was hard to turn down a cardiologist in an era when cardiology was becoming the new field of endeavor. Also, a bottom-line issue. If you wanted to fill your beds, you'd, by God, better bring in the physicians who had the patients who were willing to do it.
Did did the St. Margaret's and the Mercy Hospital.
Sure, that's right. And St. Margaret's, I remember very well because Paul Kaplan had a big service in rheumatology.
Right.
Was offered a wonderful deal at St. Margaret's Hospital. They gave him an entire floor. I think they put him in charge of the physiotherapy department. And my friend Sam Granowitz, who was an orthopedic surgeon, lives across the street from me. He's writing a history of Montefiore Hospital. He was attracted over there because now there were people who would refer to him. There were Jewish doctors over there who would refer to him. Marshall Levy, Phil Ball, Paul Kaplan, Harry Margolis built a large rheumatology medical group, also went to St. Margaret's Hospital, so no longer did Montefiore have its monopoly. We had two things working, Montefiore had two things working against it. There were fewer doctors coming to use its beds, and there were fewer patients who were willing to come to Montefiore Hospital for just Montefiore Hospital reasons. Why? Because Montefiore Hospital was now playing second fiddle to Presbyterian Hospital. The big new issues in medicine that were developing at the time were...